Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast. I'm Keith Caulfield, Senior Director of Billboard Charts.
And I'm Katie Atkinson, Billboard's Deputy Editor Digital.
Hello, Katie. How are you?
Hey, Keith. I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I am very busy, and I wish we have another. I wish we had another long weekend like we just had here in the U.S.
Oh, I love a four-day weekend. They're just luxurious, aren't they?
I mean, I did spend most of the weekend actually working. I just need more of that time. I need like a 10-day work week. I don't know. It's just
we got to watch the Thanksgiving Day parade though too.
There was a parade. So. There was an actual parade, sort of.
Yeah.
There was a dog show. There was some semblance of normalcy. Anyway.
No, those were two words put together.
Semblance of normalcy. Those are words.
Normality or normalcy.
Oh. All right.
I'm going to go ahead and copy edit you live.
What was that word that Fred Durst said on the MTV VMAs one year? That wasn't a word.
Oh, God. I have no idea.
This is like a, well, anyway, we'll move on.
I know that Jewel put the word casualty in her poem and Kurt Loder called her out on it.
Right. Kurt Loder.
Not talking about a death. Definitely talking about something being casual.
Okay, well, as always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop and sometimes wordsmithing. Is that a word?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
On
yeah.
Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. Today on the show, we've got chart news about how BTS takes over the top slots on both the Billboard 200 Albums chart and the Billboard Hot 100 Songs chart, and the top 10 arrival of Shawn Mendes and Justin Bieber's single Monster on the Hot 100.
We'll also be talking about the fallout from the Grammy nominations and how Dua Lipa's Studio 2054 concert stacks up to the real live thing. But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast provider so you won't miss an episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts.
All right, first up, let's do the chart chat. On the Billboard 200 Albums chart, BTS, you may have heard of them, nets its second number one album of 2020 and fifth number one album overall as B, that is spelled B-E, bows atop the list with 242,000 equivalent album units earned in the U.S. in the week ending November 26th, of course, according to Nielsen Music MRC data. Of that sum, 177,000 are album sales. By the way, the album was only available in two different formats, a digital album that was like about like maybe $8 or $9 and a physical album that cost $50.
Wow, that is unlike their previous strategy.
Yeah, their previous strategy was like four different physical albums that cost about $24 a piece. So they've really upped the ante.
And it had all sorts of like cards and things random put into the packages. So they went a different direction. Interesting.
Yeah, still sold a heck of a lot, though.
I'd say.
Yeah. The pop group topped the list earlier in 2020 with Map of the Soul 7. BTS also takes over the Billboard Hot 100 Songs chart as the new B album track, Life Goes On, which the group performed recently on the American Music Awards, I think in a medley with Dynamite, correct?
Yep, they did both.
Yep. Debuts at number one. It's the third number one for BTS following Dynamite and their feature turn on Josh 685 and Jason Derulo's Savage Love, Laxed Siren Beat. Yeah. Speaking of Dynamite, the release of the album, I was just saying, yeah, because that's a lot of song title to say. Speaking of
it
Dynamite, Savage, Love, Laxed, Siren Beat just rolls off the tongue.
There's so many adjectives.
It's a savage love. It's a laxed siren. The beat is kind of siren-y. Meanwhile, speaking of Dynamite, the release of the album B helped draw fans to the track because Dynamite is on the album B as Dynamite jumps back into the top 10 on the Hot 100, flying 14-3. Life Goes On, which is the first mostly Korean language song to be number one on the Hot 100, sold 150,000 copies and earned 14.9 million U.S. streams in the week ending November 26th. In terms of radio airplay, which is the third component that goes into the Hot 100, aside from sales and streams, the song basically had no airplay. So clearly this was a fan favorite that the fans really, really wanted to get to number one. And well, look at that. It worked. Look at that. For all things BTS on the charts, like what BTS, the Bee Gees, Future, and the Beatles all have in common on the charts this week, make sure to visit billboard.com/chart Beat. Staying with the Hot 100 for a moment, Shawn Mendes and Justin Bieber's team up on the new single Monster debuts at number 8, giving Mendes his 6th top 10 and Bieber his 21st. Monster had 17,000 in sales, 19.1 million in streams, and 14.4 million in airplay audience. Now, back on the Billboard 200 albums chart, Megan Thee Stallion's new album Good News makes headlines as it bows at number 2. The set is her highest charting album yet, after and also her third top 10 effort, by the way. The album includes her number one Hot 100 hit Savage, the remixed version featuring Beyoncé, as well as the new song Body, which has taken over social media via the Body Challenge, inspiring many a fan to twerk and shake their rump to the tune. Katie, have you seen the one of the guy twerking at the drive-thru at Starbucks? Because Megan shared it on her social networks.
I have not, but I'm going to go look at it after this.
It's great. It's great. And I'm like, I can't move that quickly. How do these people do it? It's amazing. But yeah, if you, for those of you that are listening, if you haven't seen it, just go find her social media. It's great. And learn a couple new dance moves while you're at it.
All right. So we wanted to circle back to a conversation we had on last week's episode.
A shell shock conversation.
Yes, it was. You heard our live reactions to the Big Four Grammy nominations for the 2021 awards show. And we talked about how we fared with our predictions and running down all the Big Four nominees. But a lot has happened since last Tuesday. There has been a lot of talk about snubs in those major categories, including Harry Styles being passed over for his album Fine Line and his song Adore You, or Fiona Apple's Fetch the Bolt Cutters not landing in the Album of the Year category. Those were a couple of shocking things. But by far, the overwhelming sentiment after nominations came out was centered on one artist. And that question was, where is The Weeknd?
He's taking a long weekend break from the Grammy Award nominations.
Yes. So he seemingly had a commercially and critically beloved project with After Hours, and it also had a smash hit song in Blinding Lights, and it seemed like a lock for nods, as you heard from Keith and my predictions, you know, the week prior. But not only did he not get any Big Four nominations, he got zero nominations, period. When he is a Grammy, he's been nominated for Grammys in the past, in what used to be the urban category, which has now been renamed. That might have worked against him. This new album is considered pop, and it's a very crowded field. That might have worked against him, but just zero nominations was a little mind-blowing to myself and others, and maybe also to The Weeknd himself.
apparently as well to The Weeknd, yeah.
You know, people typically kind of play the political game and, you know, maybe don't, they let their fans talk for them when the snubs happen, but yeah. The Weeknd did not go that direction. He actually sent out two tweets directed at the Grammys. The first one came out late in the day on nominations day, so on Tuesday the 24th, when he tweeted, "The Grammys remain corrupt. You owe me, my fans, and the industry transparency." So in that tweet, he was speaking directly to the process of Grammy voting, because he felt like that's what had failed him, I'd say. And then the next day, he tweeted, "Collaboratively planning a performance for weeks to not being invited? In my opinion, zero nominations equals you're not invited." So again, it sounds like he's saying, and you know, we don't know all the inner workings of everything, but he's saying that the Grammys were already preparing a performance moment with him, but then they didn't nominate him at all. Therefore, he's no longer thinking that that's going to happen.
Well, the two things don't work in concert together. There's nominations and there's a TV team that produces a show, and I'm sure they were probably talking to him, assuming that he was going to get nominated, because all everyone else assumed that they were. And then when the nominations come out and they're like, holy crap.
That might be the problem right there. The idea that the TV side, the producers, which forever was the same crew, was Ken Ehrlich. You heard that name a lot. But this year it's Ben Winston, who is a longtime James Corden producer. And Harry Styles lived at his house for a while. He's also well known for that.
As a random tidbit for you. All right.
But maybe that's part of the problem here. Like, the expectation that this conversation that they were having meant that there were going to be nominations. It feels a little quid pro quo, but it also, like, as you say, like, these two arms are moving separately. But if The Weeknd even begins to start thinking about a performance, he's assuming, you know, they've got inside knowledge that he doesn't have and that they're talking about it for a reason. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, you would hope that someone would have explained that explicitly and said, just because we are speaking to you does not mean that you are going to be nominated. That is something that is done by an entirely different body outside of the team that produces the television show for CBS.
Mm-hmm.
You'd hope.
Maybe a new rule, shout out to Dua Lipa, will be put into place for next year, where maybe the TV team shouldn't start approaching artists until nominations are out.
I thought that's the way it worked based upon previous interviews I read with Ehrlich, where, you know,
maybe Ben Winston didn't know how it worked since he just started doing this. Who knows?
Anyway,
on the transparency front, though, which is what he had requested in the process, I think that is something that people have been talking about and asking for a long time, because, as we've talked about, you know, there's these genre committees who deal with the specific genre categories, but then there's this whole wider committee. Basically, everybody, all the voters are allowed to get in on the big four action, correct? Therefore, it's a little bit different of a process.
I mean, I think what he's talking about, which this is, I think this has been defined, there are specific committees, genre committees within the Recording Academy, like for R&B or for hip hop or for dance or for music video, that are effectively screening committees made up of professionals from the industry who screen submissions to that category to make sure that they are appropriate for that category. Then there is the sort of special screening committee, the nomination screening committee for the big four categories, album, record, song, and best new artist, where there is a sort of blue ribbon nominating committee that goes through, I think it's like the top 20 vote getters for album, record, song, and best new artist. And then they basically determine who the final eight nominees are going to be from that long list.
Wouldn't you love to see those groups of 20? Oh, what I'd
It's like you wonder, and Paul Greiner, our awards editor, who I might be getting ahead of you, he interviewed Harvey Mason, the sort of interim CEO?
Yeah, acting CEO of the Recording Academy.
And Harvey didn't say if The Weeknd was among the top 20 vote getters in record, album, and song. He didn't say yes or no. I mean, yeah. So anyway.
He said he was surprised not to see him there, too.
Yeah, he said
actually,
that.
In that interview.
Surprised.
Yeah.
Didn't mean to cut you off there, Katie.
Well, no, not at all. The one other thing I wanted to say, based on what you were talking about also, is there was a side tiny nano controversy in the sense that Justin Bieber got mad about his own category that he ended up in, because he submitted his album Changes into the R&B categories and they just rerouted them over to pop because they're like, bro, this is a pop album. And he was very deliberate about it being R&B. So it's another interesting, you know, thread to this whole process. Well, we will, of course, be talking about the Grammys for the coming couple of months until the show on January 31st. We find it super fascinating, and clearly the artists and the fans do, too.
Y'all
so
may be bored of it already, frankly, but if people listening.
If you're listening to this show, you're not bored of it. No. You like this stuff.
It is super fascinating, but we should probably move on.
Okay, let's.
We don't have to.
Let's move on. Let's move on to the fact that that Keith and I went to a concert together on Friday, guys.
Yes, we did, sort of.
Okay, not exactly, but we both tuned in Friday night to watch Dua Lipa's Studio 2054 live stream concert, and we texted throughout it. So in 2020, it was pretty much the next best thing to attending a concert together,
We weren't live tweeting, we were live texting.
Yes. Well, so that was a private conversation, but now we'll have it in public right here on this podcast. I just wanted to start with some highlights of the live stream, in my opinion. First off, I thought the production value was, like, killer.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, they really, they were in a warehouse kind of space. They turned it into this, you know, kind of moving, breathing music video where, you know, she and her dancers were traveling through to different sets. Like, it's pretty much the closest thing anyone could have to feeling like they were in a bar, in a nightclub. Like, a lot of the scenes were centered around DJs, including the Blessed Madonna was one of those DJs.
Yeah.
Throughout the show. And it just, that was like the heartbeat of the whole thing, was like a DJ and a beat and a dance party. And that's what this album is. And we've been talking about this album since its release in March about how it deserves to be danced to, and it deserves to have like a live concert where people can, you know, dance to Dua's music live. And so basically this was the best thing that she could bring to her fans right now. And it was pretty damn good. Like, I mean, I think that, you know, if you told me in March that that's the only way I could see Dua live, I might be disappointed by that idea. But, you know, 8-9 months later, all of a sudden it felt like, it felt really great to me.
Yeah.
So one of the other things, the big stories leading up to it, was the special guests from it. For me, those were a little hit and miss, because I feel like they might have been a little overpromised. One of them was Keith's favorite, Kylie Minogue, and she, along with the French pop star Anjali, were the only two that were that actually appeared to be like on set with Dua for the main portion of the concert.
Right. Aside because from the DJs, aside from like the Blessed Madonna and stuff.
Yeah. And then FKA Twigs did this pole dance thing, and Dua was there, like on site for it, but it didn't feel like it was part of the same performance. And also, Kylie and Anjali both popped back up at the end for kind of a curtain call.
That was
sort
the
of
giveaway.
Dance thing.
Where I'm like, where's FKA Twigs? She's not there for the curtain call. Oh, it must have been pre-recorded or something.
Exactly. And then the two biggest names that were talked about beforehand were Miley
Cyrus.
Hold on,
Kylie is an enormous name, so stop.
I know, but the two biggest names.
There were two other major names that were mentioned.
I love Kylie Minogue. Let me just say that. Miley Cyrus was talked about ahead of time as a special guest. And obviously she and Dua have the new song Prisoner out together. And the performance for the live stream turned out to be kind of like an outtake from the video set.
Like exclusive B-roll.
Yeah. Like it wasn't a new live vocal. It wasn't. It was just a different kind of, you know, vantage point of the music video.
Yeah.
So that was a little disappointing. Like, there was that. And then Elton John was also promised, which is like, whoa, what are Elton and Dua going to do together?
Nothing.
And the answer is nothing.
Nothing.
Because Elton kind of appeared like this angel in the sky for a performance of Rocket Man while, like, dancers kind of watched it, you know, as it beamed down. Very cool to get Elton John on your concert. Very cool. Not deriding that at all, but it didn't exactly blend in with the rest of the vibe.
No.
For me.
No.
Okay.
I mean, Bad Bunny and J Balvin were also on it as well.
They were on TV screens. That's correct.
And Dua sang Un Dia.
And Tiny. Don't forget Tiny.
Tiny. Well, he didn't sing, though. He's just the producer.
I know.
But at least Dua sang the song Un Dia with them doing their parts on a TV screen behind them. So it was still like it was a quasi live performance where she was still doing something.
Yeah, it was
live.
Incorporated. Yeah.
Yeah. Putting those things aside, those minor quibbles.
The main question, I think, for me and Keith to discuss is, how does it compare to a real deal concert for what we're allowed to do right now, basically? So, Keith, where is the stand for you as far as like going to a concert?
Well, I mean, it's not going to a concert, for God's sakes.
I know.
When I was watching it, the only thing I could think of was like, oh, I wonder if this was what she wanted to do for the live show. I wonder if this is what she was planning on doing for the tour that she had actually announced, I think, for Europe already. There could be sirens outside. You might hear them. If not, I just kept thinking, oh, I wonder. And then I thought, I wonder if she'll hold on to this for maybe next year when we might have shows, or will the moment have already passed and she's on to the next album already? So is this going to be the only time that we'll actually see this actual production? But to me, it really felt like they really wanted to do something that wasn't just a traditional concert, more of a music video / club experience / something you wouldn't actually get anywhere else. Because it was like almost like a fantasy experience. Like, that club isn't real. That isn't a real bartender. That's not the DJ you would ever see. These are all professional dancers. But you kind of felt like a moment you were kind of watching a little mini movie of a fantasy of what this world could be like. So for what it was really cool. Would this be the same live experience? Not quite, but I could still see those costumes on stage, those dancers on stage, the musical treatments and interpretations on stage. A lot of it, yes, I could see that actually happening. I think fans would love for this to actually be reenacted in person.
And I feel like I almost kind of saw myself while watching it in the dancers, in the sense that, like, a lot of times they were just getting to freestyle dance to do as music.
Well, you know,
in,
that
like,
had been rehearsed
setting.
For days beforehand. All, quote unquote, this freestyle what... improv. No.
But it looked like they were having, like, a lot of fun, yes. because they hadn't been able to do that either. You know, it's not like they've been at nightclubs, you know, secretly or something. They also were getting this opportunity to be part of a club. I don't know. I felt kind of living vicariously through them.
I could see that too. You could see, like, there were moments where, like, she and the dancers would connect eyes and you kind of felt like, oh, I'm getting a real moment. Like, they're having a moment, like, maybe that wasn't scripted or maybe it was, but you could tell that they're all kind of feeling the moment, especially at the end when they finally, they finished at the end and you could tell that Dua was just like, everyone was like, relieved, we did it and we did this amazing thing, and how good it must have felt to do something live, even though it wasn't in a traditional sense, you know?
Totally, totally. And I feel like it was in service to the artist and to the viewer, big time. And I also feel like they will be missing out on an opportunity if they do not release this as a live album, because I loved the seamless transitions between songs. Like, there were a lot of cool, like, little nuggets of other songs worked in, like Jamiroquai songs, Missy Elliott songs dropped in to transition.
You would quite enjoy the Club Future Nostalgia remix album that Dua Lipa already released,
which has a
lot of this in it.
It was at the Blessed Madonna remix, or So that was my one thing. I kept thinking, oh, I just want to listen to this over and over again. And then I just lost my train of thought entirely. Where did I go? Oh, I wanted to mention, we also got a press release about the show on Monday that, first of all, says that you can watch the show until Sunday. So if you missed out on Friday, you're able to watch the show through to Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're listening to this podcast right now, I should say, what is that, December 6th through December 6th. Yep, so December 6th, Sunday. And they also said that more than 5 million people watched this thing, which, who knows if it's 5 million independent viewers or repeat viewers or what.
Yeah, I'm like,
kind of magic.
I think I clicked on it a number of times through the weekend, so there's a couple clicks just from me, so.
But still, like, I was actually thinking to myself while watching it, I wonder how many people are watching this, because I knew it was global. They had options for you to watch it in different time zones in different countries. And it's pretty cool to think that you tuned in to something that, like, according to this thing, like, this many people in China, this many people in India, this, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Was all watched together on Friday night. Like, I think they did a great job, you know, putting this experience together in this moment of time.
Yeah. Even if it wasn't really truly live, because there's no way this was actually a live event, but it looked, in terms of, they probably taped it live in portions
That's what I was trying to explain to Dan while we were watching it. I was like, I think they basically decided to record it live. Now, if there was a major mistake, of course they would be able to have a redo. But it looked a lot of the transitions song to song to song looked pretty seamless. So it felt live, at least.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, is that it? Is that it on Dua?
That's enough for Dua. I could talk about Dua all day, okay, but well. Let's do this again sometime, Keith. Another Friday night concert.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on. Now it's time for the chart stat of the week. Want you to make me feel like I'm the only girl in the world. Like I'm the only one that you'll ever love. 10 years ago this week, Rihanna's Grammy award-winning single, Only Girl in the World, hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100 chart, her 8th number one of so far 14 leaders. The track rose 2-1 on the Hot 100 chart dated December 4th, 2010, and spent 1 week at number one. Only Girl won a Grammy for Best Dance Recording and is one of 9 Grammy awards Rihanna has taken home out of 33 nominations. By the way, Rihanna's 14 number ones on the Hot 100 remains the third most in the chart's history for an artist, behind only Mariah Carey's 19 and the Beatles' 20 chart toppers. So there you have it. 10 years ago this week, Rihanna was the only girl in the world at number one on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. All right, Katie, we've reached the end of our big sort of post Grammy reaction Dua Lipa 2054 show, BTS show. What song should we go out on?
You know, that Only Girl chart stat makes me want Rihanna to do the next concert live stream. So she's, Rihanna,
she would probably contend, like, if you watched my fashion show live.
Oh, you know, that is, you get a piece of that feeling. But yeah. No, I want like all Rihanna, nothing else. No filler, just Rihanna.
She would be like, that wasn't filler, darling. That was fashion. Anyway, should we go out on another Rihanna song? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, I mean, let's just keep on that same vibe and do We Found Love.
Okay, great. We'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Bye.